Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey folks, hope you had a most excellent weekend. On Friday's After Party Podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson, we answered your questions and revealed some information we probably shouldn't be discussing out loud. If you want to find out what that is, go to bobseskashow.com and sign up to hear the After Party while supporting our completely independent podcast for just $10 a month. Not only do you get lots of outrageous conversation about sex, drugs, politics, and rock and roll, but you also get the post-mortem shows for no extra charge, as well as access to our community blog where you can post your own articles. So go right now to bobseskashow.com or patreon.com/bobseskashow and subscribe. Thank you in advance. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
I like how you call homosexuality an abomination.
I don't say homosexuality is an abomination, Mr. President. The Bible does.
Yes, it does. Leviticus
18:22.
Chapter and verse. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions while I had you here. I'm interested in selling my youngest daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. She's a Georgetown sophomore, speaks fluent Italian, always cleared the table when it was her turn. What would a good price for her be? While thinking about that, can I ask another? My chief of staff, Leo McGarry, insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly says he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself, or is it okay to call the police? Here's one that's really important, because we've got a lot of sports fans in this town. Touching the skin of a dead pig makes one unclean, Leviticus 11:7. If they promise to wear gloves, can the Washington Redskins still play football? Can Notre Dame? Can West Point? Can I burn my mother in a small family gathering for wearing garments made from two different threads? Think about those questions, would you? One last thing. While you may be mistaking this for your monthly meeting of the ignorant tight-ass club, in this building, when the president stands, nobody sits.
Bob Seska!
You only drink when someone else says, "Hi, Bob."
Hi, Bob.
The Bob Seska Show.
Well, show open dedicated to our great Vice President, Mike Pence. Suck it, Mike. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, June 11, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. It is the greatest soap ever. Hi, how are you? My name is Bob. What's up?
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 873 of the Trump crisis, day 35 of the constitutional crisis, 510 days until the 2020 presidential election, and clapping along with the theme song, slightly out of time because of the delay.
Yes.
My friend Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here. Sorry about my enthusiasm about the music. I really love that. I really love that clip. That's my favorite clip from The West Wing.
They nailed it.
Even though Aaron Sorkin semi-plagiarized that, but oh, man, it's great.
Oh, wait. Where did he semi-plagiarize that from? I don't know the story.
You know, I don't have the sourcing in front of me now, but I've seen what I believe is substantial evidence that he actually got that from somebody else. I think he may have even admitted later that, yeah, I adapted that from something else.
But, see, now you're destroying me. You're destroying my will to live, Buzz.
You know what? But it doesn't matter. Okay. It doesn't matter because if it's worth saying, it's worth repeating.
Gotcha.
I really believe that. I mean, it's not like somebody else wrote the whole series, The West Wing. Just that one scene was inspired by something someone else had written.
Right, so, okay.
That's okay. That's actually a compliment, in my opinion, a way of including what Sorkin thought was a wonderful approach to that particular mindset.
That's right. It was just a great scene, and now I'm going to have to look this up. I'm going to have to find the source material for this now.
Well, I'm sorry. No, I revere Aaron Sorkin as much as you do.
Yeah.
But that one little scene there, which is my favorite, I think, from the series, mainly because of the attitude that Martin Sheen conveyed in performing that scene as well as the words themselves, but it bears repeating. So
you could kind of say that President Bartlett went on Fox News Channel right there. That's exactly what you can get away with on Fox News. That's what you can do. The influence that you can have on Fox News Channel. Okay, yeah, I know. I'm
excited because I've landed a new job as tourism director for the Dominican Republic. It's going to be so easy. Is it too soon for that? At least I'm not having a Handmaid's Tale viewing party. So I'm relieved. Relieved that's the case. Actually, I'm celebrating the job that I do have because this week marks my my sixth year of Buzz Burbank News and Comment.
Oh, hey!
As a freestanding show.
Six years. Outstanding.
And boy, are my arms tired.
Right.
So yesterday, Bob.
What happened yesterday, Buzz?
Well, I'm glad you asked because House Democrats heard testimony from Nixon's White House counsel, John Dean, and I'm not sure, but today I think it's somebody from the Warren G. Harding administration. So I'm looking forward.
Everything old is new again. It's almost like Hollywood rebooting everything, right? It was a reboot. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you got to say this for the Democrats. They're not impeaching the president, but they're not impeaching the president.
That's so true. So there's something beneficial there. I'm not sure if that was a joke, but I'll take it as one anyway.
I'm not sure either. No one really is, and doesn't matter. I don't have a lot of time anyway. I just ate a chili dog, so let's get started.
All right, good. Oh, my God, Buzz Burbank. Okay, where do we start today? I guess we should start with the Judiciary Committee hearing. Oh, you know what? Fuck that. I'm not starting with the Judiciary Committee just yet.
No?
Because I have to say a huge congratulations to my queen, my biggest influence, Stephanie Miller. She was nominated for the Radio Hall of Fame, which is just gigantic. Yeah. So... nominated for the Radio Hall of Fame in the spoken word category. I'm not sure. I guess that's talk.
That's what we do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It could be anything, but yes, any spoken word.
It's an old-timey way to refer to it as spoken word, but it is just as valid. Stephanie Miller's been nominated. What you have to do now is you have to go to my Facebook page, or actually, you know what? I'm going to put a link in the description. Go to that link. Vote for Stephanie Miller. Vote early and often, as many times as you can. Come up with aliases. Scam the whole... No, I'm kidding. Don't bring Russians into this, or just don't do anything silly. Go there. Vote once if you have to. If you want to vote a second time, you can do that too. But in the meantime, congratulations to Stephanie. Very, very well-deserved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Extraordinarily well-deserved. I could sit here and I could spend the next hour and a half, Buzz, doing nothing but praising Stephanie Miller and the kind of radio she's doing. I can't say this enough. She was able to combine morning radio and political talk in a way that had more progressive talk show hosts adopted that same approach. There would actually be more progressives on the radio right now. I mean, that's the secret to delivering this kind of information. The key to it is to keep it entertaining. And while I may be failing on that that standard right here and now, but the fact of the matter is that you have to combine those things. You have to make it interesting. You have to make it funny. You have to keep it moving, keep everything going at a nice steady pace on the show and so on. And you have to make progressive talk interesting instead of just, I mean, we've got all the facts. We know that. We've got the truth on our side. You just have to make that truth entertaining, and because, you know, you want people to listen. And so if it's not entertaining,
exactly,
that's people tend to,
yeah, I was talking to, yeah, talking about that last week, in fact,
right, right, well, people tend to not listen if you're not entertaining. So
exactly, well, she's always been entertaining. I first met Stephanie Miller in 1980 something.
Wow.
When I was actually part of her show for 1 week.
Oh, my God. Now, oh, yeah. You have to tell me this story. What was the, well, what were the circumstances beyond this?
I had just been fired by CBS for the first time.
Oh,
they
fun.
They would rehire me later.
Bastards.
You knew they would. I knew they'd be back. but they fired me the first time. And so I'm out of work flopping around in Chicago.
Yeah.
And the regular news guy on the Stephanie Miller album rock station morning show that she was doing at the time.
Yeah.
It was she and some guy, I don't remember. Her, I remember. The other guy, I'm sorry. not so much.
It wasn't Chris Lavoie, by the way. It was I think this was pre-Chris Lavoie. I think Chris Lavoie was 9 years old at that time.
she was very talented, and I was very excited to be there. And it was a weird circumstance because the guy who normally did the news on her show was on vacation for a week. And he was good, but I got in there and I guess, you know, kind of wowed some people, and that made everyone uncomfortable, including myself. and so because now it looks like I'm stealing this guy's job when I knew going in, you know, it was for a week. And so out of this thing called, I don't know, loyalty, they let the guy come back from vacation and sent me packing. But I thoroughly enjoyed my 1 week on what was, I guess, that incarnation of the Stephanie Miller show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, whenever you fill in for someone on the radio, you're always hoping, you got your fingers crossed, well, if I'm really good, they're just going to give me the permanent spot on the show. And that's always the mindset.
I would never think a thing like that, Bob.
I know. You're such a nice guy. But no, I mean, again, that kind of underscores, telling that story underscores how long a shadow Stephanie Miller casts in terms of broadcasting, where she knows everything there is. I mean, she could do all kinds of different radio. And this just happens to be the kind of radio that she enjoys most and that she's the best at. But that experience doing AOR radio in Chicago is what made her the talk show host that she is now. And that's, I think you could apply that to you. You can apply that to a lot of people who are doing talk or news right now. And to have that.
We're all old. That's the common thread.
Everyone's old and everyone has experience doing crappy music radio, including me, where I was Stretch Cunningham for a period of time, sadly enough. And that whipped the enthusiasm right out of me. And I ran screaming for the internet. So that is everything's full circle. So, okay, next thing. This is once again semi-related to radio. The Republican members of the House Judiciary Committee yesterday went full G. Gordon Liddy, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Did you watch the hearings with John Dean and Barbara McQuaid?
I didn't. I had stuff to do, and I saw the first show in the '70s. I've certainly read summaries of it, and I'm aware of the litany. I actually saw a nice list of all the sort of insulting things that Republicans said in the course of their side of the questioning yesterday.
Right, right.
I'm aware of what they did, and I'm aware of the mentions of G. Gordon Liddy, and that certainly opens the door for us again, doesn't it?
Well, what they were doing is Jim Jordan and all the rest of the Republicans were acting like G. Gordon Liddy. I mean, they were going full Liddy when it came to criticizing John Dean. I mean, everything old is new again. I mean, they were just recycling all the crap that G. Gordon Liddy, that we heard firsthand, Buzz, G. Gordon Liddy saying about John Dean for years and years and years on the radio, and then going back
to John Dean. Yeah, John Dean, a traitor. He's a traitor, filthy traitor. Rat.
What did he used to call? He used to call John Dean a rat. John Dean was a rat.
Because John Dean ratted out the Nixon administration, ratted out the the break-in and all of that.
Yeah, and of course, Trump was doing the same thing yesterday, too, trying to discredit John Dean for... And I always love when Donald Trump accuses someone else of being a corrupt liar. It's yeah. hilarious, the irony of those statements. But again, it was the same old crap. John Dean is a rat. I mean, Donald Trump may right. have well just called him a rat. I mean, right. you know, I wish if Donald Trump was going to go full G. Gordon Liddy, I wish he would have burned his own hand. I mean, that would have made things extra appropriate. At least we would have had some fun watching that.
He got his holding it over a toaster.
Right. Yeah, holding it over a really hot Arby's roast beef sandwich. That's about as far as Donald Trump goes. Ah, this roast beef sandwich. Ah, so hot and stingy. I wish they wouldn't make them so hot. Ow. Ow, I keep trying to touch it, but it burns me.
Or so big.
That's right. So the Republicans, of course, beclown themselves. They were unable to refute the Mueller report or any of the panelists' remarks. So Jim Jordan and the others merely acted like Trump's Twitter feed is kind of what they were doing yesterday.
If we're going to give this a fair review and you know, bless their hearts. Like I've concluded, the Democrats were just trying to do something yesterday.
Right.
Because they're still awaiting cooperation. They're still awaiting votes. We're expecting a vote that will authorize the Judiciary Committee to go to court and to get permission to see the grand jury testimony from the Mueller investigation that's been sealed. But this stuff takes a little time. And so in the meantime, they've got to do something, and they do want to educate the public. And so the Democrats are putting on a show to educate the public and to buy a little time and to get the ball rolling, make it appear they're doing something.
Yeah.
And I guess they ultimately are. We're going to see more action when the Intelligence Committee on Wednesday, tomorrow, when they start looking at the counterintelligence aspects of the Mueller report.
Yeah, I can't wait.
In a public hearing, mm-hmm. a public hearing. So, you know, there's some movement there, but Congress can only do so much while it waits for things to happen. And they are doing things through the courts. But it was sort of a weak start, in my opinion. John Dean isn't going to sell any tickets at the box office. It just isn't.
That's right.
It's not going to. I'm not going to cast him in my movie because he's not going to sell any tickets. I'm sorry. But like we were just saying a moment ago, last week, to convey important information to people, you have to present it in a way that explains to them why it's important to them, in a way that gets their attention and keeps their attention because it is very important to them. And so, you know, I mean, this is just the sort of the path that they're following here. It was sort of a weak start. The testimony were from MSNBC commentators who also happened to be very smart former federal prosecutors.
Yeah.
But again, it was just kind of a little show that didn't carry any drama. It didn't sell any tickets. So I'm not sure that it accomplished its mission. So a certain amount of criticism of what went on yesterday is warranted, I think. While I'm saying at the same time, while I'm defending the Democrats, also saying that, well, at least they're doing something and they're setting these hearings into motion.
Well, one of the things I think it accomplished yesterday was just setting the stage. I think what we saw yesterday were the coming attractions, the trailer before the movie. The point being, let's get some professional analysis over some broad stroke aspects of the Mueller report and see if we can educate the public in terms of what constitutes a crime, may not constitute a crime. Let's have some analysis. We can't get Mueller in because Mueller's at Rehoboth Beach or something drinking Mai Tais. Who knows what Robert Mueller himself is doing.
But if there was nobody there to hear it, did it make a sound?
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's I think it's overall for the people who are following along, and certainly the people who follow along just in terms of seeing the clips on the news, I think it did serve a purpose insofar as while it may not have been a gigantic blockbuster hearing with all kinds of revelations and stirring moments, I think it's set the stage. I think it's kind of like they're creating a seven-layer dip. And this was first layer. And it may
how
not,
about this?
By itself, it's boring, but if you add the other six layers, it's getting tastier.
Are we still here? Maybe a dress rehearsal. Think of it as maybe a dress rehearsal for the show that's to come. Things could get hopping as soon as tomorrow in that Intelligence Committee hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So, they had to start somewhere. Absolutely, they had to start somewhere. And part of this is in response to the impeachment crowd. Remember me saying a couple of months ago or so that even if we don't call it an impeachment, we can still have an impeachment, a series of impeachment hearings.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, it may not matter what we call it if it leads to the same end. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the start of that, and maybe it will get a lot more interesting in the court battles today that are underway and in the Intelligence Committee hearing tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think, too, we can't underestimate the value of just repeating the findings of the Mueller report. And again,
right.
You know, I see where you're going with your analysis of this first meeting. I agree that it wasn't this pulse-pounding event with all kinds of revelations, but at the same time, I feel like the more often these items from the Mueller report get repeated in a public setting, the more Agreed. Opportunity there is to convince people. I go back to that one of those town halls with Justin Amash where he, you know, fielded a question from someone who said, "Well, I had no idea there was anything negative in the Mueller report. I mean, based on what Bill Barr said, everything seems fine. And Donald Trump was exonerated fully. No obstruction, no collusion."
Right.
And so in that regard, it did work. And so right now what we're doing is creating a counter narrative to Bill Barr's narrative. And again, I wish Robert Mueller would step up a little more. And I think I'm trying to be as kind and understanding as I can about that because I know the quality of Robert Mueller. But the fact of the matter is obviously there is copious misinformation out there in terms of what the Mueller report discovered, what it didn't discover, what it concluded, and what it didn't conclude. And for other people to go into Congress and say, yes, well, here's what the, you know, this analysis was. This was obstruction. That wasn't. This was. This wasn't. That's fine. But you need Robert Mueller himself in there to add gravitas to it because Robert Mueller was chosen for a very specific reason.
Agree.
That is his reputation as a prosecutor, his reputation. Yeah.
Robert Mueller sells movie tickets.
That's
Robert
right.
Mueller will get him into the theater. Now they will hear you. I agree about needing to repeat the Mueller report and parts thereof as often as possible. But it won't really help unless someone hears it. And if you bring Robert Mueller in, it will. I've been reading some interesting stuff about him, theories about why he didn't do more or say more. One of the best arguments, and I'll expound on this in my show on Thursday, is that he wanted the thing to see. He wanted the Mueller's report to see the light of day. And he knew that if he did certain things with it, there were rules and nuances within the Justice Department that would allow William Barr to keep it as the confidential memo that a special counsel's report is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So that's one side of it, that he, Robert Mueller, didn't make an accusation and didn't charge a crime because technically those were out of his purview and he's a technical guy.
Yeah.
And he knew that by sticking to the technicalities, he'd be able to get the report past William Barr and into the hands of Congress and the American people. So he may have done a smart thing by backing away from that. At the same time, I've heard it reasonably argued that this is an occasion, especially when you're out propagandized by the president, this is an occasion for which it may very well be justified to step outside of convention, to break the rules a little bit or bend the rules a little bit to counterweight the misinterpretation that's been cemented in the public by William Barr.
You know, one of the things I heard yesterday, because I was in and out of the hearing, I didn't watch it continuously. I had lunch with my dad yesterday, so it was right smack in the middle of the entire proceeding.
Yeah,
so I missed a good 2 hours of it.
The way it always goes.
But then when I got home in time to see Barbara McQuaid fielding some questions about obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating back and forth at one point because she was really underscoring how Donald Trump's insistence that Don McGahn write a letter to be released to the public that says Donald Trump never asked Don McGahn to fire Robert Mueller violated its own separate statute from obstruction of justice. It was like a document falsification, like a presidential records falsification, I think that was the way she was describing it. And that Robert Mueller decided to approach that particular instance just through the prism of obstruction of justice. But if he wanted to also charge some sort of document falsification along with that, he could have. So again, there was an example of perhaps Robert Mueller pulling his punches here, or taking a very narrow approach to Rod Rosenstein's original mandate for the special counsel's office in that investigation.
I think the theory is he took that narrower approach. According to a law professor I respect, he took this approach to allow the report to be made public, to get it by. Yeah. He felt anything more than that would have jeopardized us ever seeing it. We still wouldn't have seen it today if it had contained prosecutorial recommendations.
Yeah.
Then at that point, a special counsel's report becomes a confidential Department of Justice memo.
Interesting.
Automatic. And so it doesn't have to see the light of day.
Yeah.
So between William Barr realizing the public pressure and Mueller's carefulness in staying within those very tight DOJ guidelines, the report got through. It got to us. So I guess we can be thankful for that. But as I said, as far as Mueller speaking, that's outside of convention, unlike what he's done prior. And he doesn't go outside of convention. And so that's going to be a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
If ever there was an occasion for going outside of convention, if there was ever a calling to do that, this is it. This is that moment.
It seems, and again, I don't want to go down the road of sounding perpetually discouraged by the whole thing, but I feel like there's so much more to be discovered here that should have been discovered by a special counsel and not by members of Congress, where you have this patina of politics and partisanship layered on top of these investigations, where it's just disappointing and upsetting and frustrating to me that we didn't have a special counsel who was, examining the counterintelligence investigation. Who was following the money trail and so on. And I know some of these things were handed off, and that's fine too. Apparently the counterintelligence investigation was handed back to the FBI by Robert Mueller to say, well, I'm not going to look at this. This isn't part of my mandate. So here, take this stuff back and continue on your own. I feel like Donald Trump is in that place once again, where we all know the crimes, we all know the laundry list of terrible things that he's done, impeachable offenses on down the line, prosecutable offenses in there too. And yet, once again, Donald Trump walking between the raindrops, just not getting a single spot of water on his entire, orange melon. You know what I mean?
Like Eddie Haskell.
That's
June
right.
Cleaver,
that's right.
June Cleaver knew that Eddie Haskell was a no good creep. She knew it. She
right?
knew it.
Yeah.
She knew it to the very center of her bones.
Yeah.
June Cleaver knew that Eddie Haskell was a creep, but she could never prove it.
Yeah.
Because he put on that act, he put on that performance, and that's the kind of lie, and he got away with it, and that's your Donald Trump right there, only about 300 pounds heavier.
Right. There's a Forrest Gump aspect to this too, because he's not a smart man, and yet somehow he's been able to just stumble into these scenarios where he's able to circumvent some of the smartest and most reputable people in Washington, D.C. He's been able to sidestep ramifications coming down from, whether it's Robert Mueller or, to a certain respect, members of Congress as well. And again, there is no grand strategy here. There is no three-layer chess that he's playing. This is Donald Trump going, dip, 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 I wonder what this button does,
Hollywood calls this a fish out of water comedy.
Yeah. He just, suddenly Donald Trump, just finds himself shaking hands with Nixon or playing ping pong in China or something.
One of these things does not belong here.
Yeah. That's right. So lots more to talk about here on the show today. I want to get into these remarks the other day by Joe Biden with regard to the Republicans, which was sort of strange. Some more Trump things here, as well as... this deal with Mexico being a gigantic lie. And then kind of a question that I want to open up, not only for you, Buzz, but also for our commenters, because, again, talk about Donald Trump walking between the raindrops here.
Yeah.
I get a feeling that Donald Trump is doing something that hasn't been quite considered yet, or if it has, we haven't heard anything about it by investigators, whether it's the Southern District of New York, which is where I think the jurisdiction would be for something like I want to talk about here coming up. But regardless, Howard Fineman raised a point that I've made on a few occasions too, and it has to do with Donald Trump and the stock market. And it doesn't have to do with Donald Trump influencing the stock market to do better. Is Donald Trump manipulating the stock market for his own financial gain?
Yeah, well, sure.
serious question. And again,
I'll save you the time. I'm going to say yes.
Well, then fuck it. We don't need to talk about it.
I do want to hear this. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it here in just a second. Back after these words.
Hey, this is Jody Hamilton, host of the podcast From the Bunker. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll love my show, where every week Sean Barton, David Schockett, and I discuss politics, sports, pop culture. That show on HBO that I don't watch, find it at sexyliberal.com and on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.
The Bob Seska Show.
This is another song by Gin, Chocolate, and Bottle Rockets covering the Eurythmics, Sweet Dreams. I love this one. This is so great. Of course, this is a second song from Gin, Chocolate, and Bottle Rockets that we played here on the show. This is Jen Farley, wife of Mike Farley Band's Mike Farley. And, you know, they sent me, Jen and Mike Farley sent me some chocolate from, let me see here, where's this from? MailMeChocolates.com.
Uh-huh.
And this is extremely delicious chocolate. I mean, it's maybe not Sherry's Berries deliciousness, but it is.
Oh dear,
it is quite delicious. That is absolutely true.
We'll have to have a taste off.
Yeah, I'm hoping next time, in addition to the chocolate, they send me some gin and bottle rockets, because those are even more fun than chocolate. What can I say?
Bottle rockets may not be sent through the U.S. mail.
It's almost 4th of July, too. I could have used some bottle rockets.
I worked at a radio station once. It was out on the edge of town. And there was a farmhouse next door that had, every year they did a fireworks stand. Mm. They sold fireworks. And one year, foolishly, by everyone involved, we got into a bottle rocket war. Now,
those always turn out well.
Well, the stakes are much higher for them, because they have they're in a tent full of fireworks.
Yeah, so, I would say so.
You know, things could have gone horribly wrong. Likewise, we're at a radio station made of tin and glass and electricity. Yeah. And so, you know, things could have gone crazy there, too.
Oh, my God.
The stuff we do when we're kids.
Yeah. Buzz Burbank was a very short-term member of the Jackass crew, where they're just...
Here's the truth. Here's the actual truth. I was the guy who always said, "You guys were going to get in trouble."
Of course you were.
That was me.
Of course you were. Oh, my God.
I was the fun one. Yeah.
Well, maybe you can pass along that advice to Joe Biden and his campaign, because, you know, here we are once again. Everyone who supports Joe Biden has to go, "Well, what he meant to say was dot, dot, dot." And here we are again, where Joe Biden apparently thinks that the Republicans are going to behave once Trump is out of office. And it's funny that Joe Biden doesn't seem to remember the Obama years. He doesn't remember the relentless demagoguing of Reverend Ryder, Bill Ayers. He doesn't remember tan suits or arugula.
How did this manifest itself? What did he do that indicates he thinks that Republicans will behave?
Well, he was, let's see, Joe Biden told a room of donors and lobbyists on Monday, because he's not campaigning, he's only raising money, which is, again... you know, you want to give me heart palpitations? Tell me that Joe Biden is kind of sleepwalking his way through this campaign. And you know, I'll be in line for the defibrillator paddles at some point here. But he was talking to donors and lobbyists, and he said this. Mm-hmm. Here's the deal. We all know, and I don't think this is hyperbole, we all know in our gut this election is the most important election we've ever engaged in, and not just because I'm running, he said. 8 years of Donald Trump will fundamentally change who we are in profound ways, he said. With Trump gone, you're going to begin to see things change, because these folks, he's referring to the Republicans, these folks know better. They know this isn't what they're supposed to be doing. You know, fact check. I mean, far be it from me to fact check the former vice president. Fact check, they don't know better. These folks don't know
well,
better.
Well, they do, but they don't care.
Yeah,
I think I know what he means, but and there I sound like that guy saying, here's what he meant.
Please
proceed.
Well, I mean, again, this is just... I understand what he's doing. He's trying to appeal to the middle. He's trying to appeal to disaffected Republicans, too. And that's, you know, okay, fine, I get it. But to present absolute fiction like that, or if he actually believes what he's saying, to approach yet another presidential administration going, well, those Republicans, once I actually get into office, they're going to be nice and they're going to talk to me and we're going to work on deals and we're going to get things done. Well, that's not going to happen because, I mean, we saw the last time Joe Biden was in the White House with Barack Obama, of course, and there were, you know, accusations of czars and liberal fascism, whatever that means. Right. He doesn't seem to remember the witch doctor photos or accusations that Obama pals around with terrorists. You know, the ongoing.
But we've had that into my memory ever since Clinton. And,
yeah,
you know, you're always going to have a Newt Gingrich and a Mitch McConnell. Those guys are always going to be around. The question is, are they going to be in power? And that's one of the things the 2020 election can determine. The Democrats have a tough road to hoe.
Yeah.
In terms of winning the Senate, but it's possible. It can be done, especially if we get a turnout, which is one of the reasons we got to keep voters motivated no matter which candidate they support. I think there are too many people on Tinder hooks waiting for Joe Biden to screw up, and that may well be inevitable. There's a perceived track record of that. But I think there's almost an eagerness to see him fail, which surprises me. He is at the moment and this far out. This is frequently not how things turn out at all. But at the moment, he's the front runner. You and I talked about this last week, that America is attracted to him in the polls because of the normalcy that he represents. So. We can get into the whole thing with the Hyde Amendment and all that, but I think he's, I don't know that he's done anything horribly wrong yet, except for some of the, some of the awkward personal interactions that he's had. I haven't seen him screw up on policy yet.
Yeah. Well, I just speaking for myself, and certainly I'm sure there are people out there who do want him to fail. But the fact of the matter is if he is going to be the nominee, there's no one who I want to have succeed more than Joe Biden. My problem is that I don't get the sense that his head might be in this, but I don't think his body is in this. I don't think Joe Biden is in this to fight, to be energetic, to inspire people to turn out to vote. I mean, we've seen election after election. Democratic voters need to be inspired. They need to be fluffed. They need to be jazzed up in order to turn out in numbers large enough to overcome all of the systemic hurdles that we have to jump, whether it's voter suppression. Now we've got foreign governments involved in our elections, interfering with them and hacking and conducting these social media campaigns. And I feel like you need to bring the fire and fury. You need to, sorry to use that term, but you need to bring the energy. And I think Joe Biden is in this as, one last once around. Here we go again, guys. I'm going to give it a good shot now. And I don't have to campaign early on.
Saying,
I just have to raise money. And I feel like you can't sleepwalk through a campaign in which
it's early, but these
are the stakes, and these, I mean, you see what the rest of the field is doing, and everyone is campaigning except for Joe Biden.
But at this point, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I'm considering his age also, and I'm also considering the fact that not yelling is part of the normalcy that he brings to the table. So there may be some strategy. The trick is finding that happy medium between the enthusiasm and the yelling. Now, let me say this. Back in January, I believe it was a Monmouth poll that said that 56-57% of Democrats were interested in beating Trump, that they wanted somebody. Here's what the poll question was. They wanted somebody who would go after Trump.
Yeah.
And I'm going to withhold judgment on Biden's level of enthusiasm for another 24, 48 hours, because within that period of time, Biden will give a speech. in which he will go after Trump hard and wide. And I think to some degree he's capitalizing on that poll taken earlier this year that said that's what Democratic voters are looking for in a candidate. That also, I think, is why he changed his stance on the Hyde Amendment.
Yeah.
It from a religious standpoint, from his own personal religious standpoint and his background, he was reluctant to do that and supported it for ever so long. But now, and the reality has changed, frankly, between then and now. I think I see a guy responding to what the people want and giving them what they want, maybe just in smaller doses and not burning himself and not overexposing himself. That's maybe another way of looking at everything that's going on. Biden's not my first choice. I like him. He's not my first choice for president. And there are some really strong, interesting contenders out there who are coming on strong and may very well overtake him. And if that happens, fantastic. That's great. You know, I'm, again, whoever the nominee is. I don't want to throw shade on any candidate
at
this point yet, to the extent that I can. At some point, I'm going to have to, because somebody's going to do something so incredibly stupid and awful that it'll have to be called out. But it hasn't happened yet, in my opinion.
Well, there's something that's comforting in seeing the polling right now showing that Joe Biden defeats Donald Trump in places like Texas, Michigan, Pennsylvania. I mean, the polling is extraordinarily favorable and quite tempting with Joe Biden. I mean, I get that. Right. As someone who is terrified by what's going to happen at the beginning of November next year, seeing these poll numbers right now is quite enticing. I get why people like the only one. I mean, the Democratic establishment is seeing the and I'm not saying that in a pejorative sense. I mean, fact is there is an establishment Democratic Party, and they're seeing these poll numbers and they're going, you know what, maybe Joe's the guy, and maybe we need to go with a safe bet, maybe we go with the counterintuitive candidate, you know, and that is seems to be the conventional wisdom right now in the Democratic Party. My problem is that it may falsely boost a candidate who can't really sustain into a hardcore primary battle followed by a hardcore general election battle against systemic hurdles as well as this Trump machine. And so my concern is that Joe Biden doesn't have the energy and staying power as some of the other top tier candidates do. And so therefore he's being set up for a colossal crash and burn, because I don't think his head is in this. I don't think he's got the same level. I don't think he, at least he's not projecting the same level of urgency and stakes that we're seeing.
I think I will. I want to hear this speech on Trump. And I want to see how he performs in the first debate, which is coming up in just, 3 weeks or something?
Yeah, something like that,
You know, so, you know, let's, I'm going to withhold judgment on some of these things until then.
Yeah.
Because let's see what kind of energy we see in the debate. Let's see, how he takes on Trump, which is clearly what a lot of voters want. Some of that has shifted, some of the Democratic priorities have shifted a little bit more toward abortion and other issues, but removing Trump and fighting Trump and that sort of thing was the Democrats' number one preference and concern as of January.
I seriously hesitate to even start to talk about the Democratic primaries. But again, when situations like this come up where, you know, there's a red flag like Joe Biden blowing off having to deal with the Republicans and especially the Senate side, it's alarming because is he thinking clearly? Is he seeing the same Republican Party that we're all witnessing, who are so willing to sell their souls, to put their necks on the line, in some cases in a legal sense, where they could have been subject of investigation and they might still be because of their loyalty to this mad king in the White House. And so, I mean, to give those people such a wide berth, to give them such the benefit of the doubt here is either he's doing it deliberately to reach out, or he just doesn't understand the political climate anymore.
Many, many Republicans flipped in Watergate from against to in favor of impeachment. Some will hear Some will come around. Some will, what was the expression, find Jesus and come around here. Some will, some won't, and just as we've seen before. And this is all subject to change based on what comes out.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a downside to pitching the idea of unity at this point, especially considering the votes Biden or any Democratic presidential candidate needs to go after.
So there's
a possibility of some turnaround on the Democratic side, but it's just so early.
Well, interesting things happening in the stock market right now, earlier today, Trump tweeted, good day in the stock market. People have no idea the tremendous potential of our country has for growth. He says in all caps, and many other things. And then the Dow Jones was, last time I checked, in the negative territory. So, whoops.
Oh,
yeah, sorry, dude. Sorry, Biff. Not that I'm rooting for it to be in negative territory, you know, when it is, and it contradicts something that Donald Trump has said or been trying to take credit for, fine. I'm okay with that. But nevertheless, I mean, Howard Fineman, as I said before the break, brought up this interesting point, and I think I've mentioned this a few times on the show and maybe even in article form, but Howard Fineman tweeted, my Twitter feed is asking a legitimate question. Are Donald Trump's business and family profiting from insider knowledge of his pending market-moving tweets, comments, and bargaining stands? My guess would be yes. The real questions are, yeah, who is doing it for him and how? And the answer to this question, as you said, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
And obviously, we have no hard evidence for it either, but it makes complete sense. Donald Trump knows the loopholes he's able to waltz through. He's at least knowledgeable enough for that. And he knows that he hasn't, divested from his businesses. He has no separation whatsoever between his presidency and his family business and his family fortune and so on.
It's good to have something to fall back on.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, one of the questions I have is whether or not Donald Trump will deliberately allow or maybe is intentionally doing these tariff wars and these threats of new tariffs and everything, knowing that whenever he does, the stock market takes a shit. And then my question from there is,
buy low.
Yeah, right. Well, it's even more notorious than that. It's not necessarily like, okay, I'm going to drive the stock market down and then I'm going to buy and then drive it back up again and then drive it down again and basically play the market like that. I think what Donald Trump might be doing is, because of his trade war, I think whenever he issues another one of these tweets, one of these threats that sends the stock market in a downward spiral, I think he's either shorting a sector or he's shorting the entire DJIA, or if not the S&P or the NASDAQ. I think he's basically, what shorting is basically where you take, you place bets on the failure of the stock market. You borrow money. It's a whole complicated situation when you go to short a stock. But the long story short is that you actually make money when a stock goes down through shorting a stock. And so, therefore, if Donald Trump can manipulate the stock market, and we've seen him do it time after time, and so, therefore, it's no mystery to him that when he says something about, oh, now I'm going to impose tariffs on Mexico, or I'm going to do this thing to Mexico or China or whoever, that the stock market goes down, he knows that it's going to happen that way. He knows what the consequences are of these statements. And so why not try to make a buck off of those things? He's trying to make a buck off of everything else. So it makes sense. So how do you legally acquire that information? What do you do in terms of, I mean, can they subpoena Donald Trump's stock purchases? Can they subpoena, I guess, I don't know if Mazars does handles his stocks. I would imagine he's got financial advisors. I don't know.
Separate. I would think, yeah, that's just, I believe, just an accounting firm.
Yeah.
I would suspect
they're not a broker, right? Yeah.
Financial advisors.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, there's got to be a broker out there who handles Donald Trump's stocks. If it's not Don Jr. and Eric who handle his stocks, I mean, and it's entirely possible they're doing it. It's entirely possible that Donald Trump himself isn't doing it, and the Trump boys are doing it on his behalf. Absolutely. I mean,
well, this is a president who wanted to control the Fed the way Xi Jinping controls China's Fed. he would like to be able to control the money that way. So, no, this doesn't surprise anybody when you see how he's violated the Emoluments Clause. He's absolutely used this job to enrich himself and his family. And so none of this would be surprising. Of course, I think you can subpoena anything.
Yeah.
Whether it's a successful subpoena has to be determined in court. So maybe we can get them and maybe we can't. And somebody will have to go after that. But gosh, we've got a lot of things to investigate.
Yeah, that was going to be my next point, which is that once again, we see the fire hose of news working to Trump's benefit, where there are so many things. Again, you know, whether Donald Trump is shorting the stock market, my God, would have to be item number 10,842 on the list of horrible things that Donald Trump does. And we may never even get that far. And that is
prioritize.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a serious problem because, you know, good God, again, it sends the message that, well, if you're a criminal president, make sure you're like a big time criminal president, because the more crimes, go deep. Because we're never going to be able to catch everything. And if you're only caught on a couple of things, why, there's dozens of other shit that you're never going to be called on. And so it's a
crime spree.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And again, there are crimes that we're going to hear about long after Trump is dead. Years from now, we're going to be reading about things that he did that he was responsible for that he was never held accountable for.
Listen, if we get him on the principle of preserving democracy as he attacks and erodes our various institutions within and without government, if we get him on just that, if we get him on just the cruelty, the abject cruelty to immigrants that he's perpetrated, and to citizens of this country, and to veterans in some cases, if we get to that, then I think we will have covered the most important things. Other things are important too, but nothing seems quite as important to me as those two things.
I guess we're just going to have to be satisfied, Buzz, with knowing about the things after the fact. Because like with Al Capone, they got, famously, the Untouchables got Al Capone on tax evasion. But we all know that there were dozens of other crimes that Al Capone was responsible for. And I think that suffices, even though he didn't go to Alcatraz for committing God knows how many murders and racketeering and all the rest of it, that he only went to prison because of tax evasion. That doesn't explain the whole scenario of what Al Capone is ultimately responsible for. And I think the same is going to be the case for Donald Trump. I mean, now that I really think about it, you know, he doesn't have to be convicted on 10,000 different crimes in order for us to hold him responsible for those crimes or for history to recognize them.
Yeah, you're right, though. It'll be hard for history to record and explain, or for us to explain everything that occurred in the Trump era. They're going to joke about us like there was a really good joke about Vietnam War veterans. And the joke was to the effect that, how many Vietnam veterans does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer is, you don't know, man. You weren't there. We will be able to say the same thing because no one can know what this was like. Now, obviously, a very different, not as directly a life and death situation, but in both cases, fighting for our country, I think it can be argued. And we will be able to say with no insult to anyone, I hope, that we'll be able to say you can't know what it was like unless you were there. That's how deep this iceberg goes.
Yeah. Well, let's take a last break here, and I'm going to come back. Apparently, Donald Trump's been lying or asking his aides to lie about his internal polling. Shocking. Donald Trump's lying again and telling his people that they also have to lie. This is
or as we call it, Tuesday.
Back with more show right after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
This is Gaithersburg's own Carousel. It's Carousel with a K, featuring someone that we both know and are good friends with. This is the lead singer on this in this band, Carousel, is Maya Nicole. She is Mark Ronick's super talented daughter. She is the singer of this band. Mark Ronick, of course, is from the Mark and Lowell Show on the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com. You know, Carousel just won first prize in the Montgomery County Montgomery County's Got Talent competition.
Crank it up here.
There we go.
Now, listen to that.
Yeah.
This is a very young woman. This when she was a little girl, she sat on my knee and I read her The Night Before Christmas.
Oh my God.
And I remember shortly after that, her dad asked her, or she told her dad what she wanted to be when she grew up. She said, I wanna be the female Beatles.
Oh, well, yeah, she's well on her way now.
This was as a little kid. And listen to her belting out the songs now. It's just amazing.
Yeah. There's a guitar solo right here.
Great band, yeah. Carousel with a K.
Outstanding.
And that's a big deal. A big deal to win the MoCo, the Montgomery County Has Got Talent contest, because that is a huge talent with a huge county, rather.
Yeah.
A lot of people, the D.C. suburbs, and there's a lot of well-educated and talented people, and sometimes wealthy people who live in that county. And so it's a county that produces a lot of talent. Maya really stands out here.
Yeah. And there's an extraordinary number of unsigned indie bands in this area. I mean, the Washington, D.C. music scene is gigantic. Yeah. And for them to be singled out as being the most talented in Montgomery County is a huge accolade. And I want to emphasize here, I mean, Maya is 16 years old. There are members of Carousel who... There are members of the band who are 15 and 14 years old. My God, when I was 14 years old, I don't want to tell you what I was busily occupying myself with, but it wasn't damn good at music.
We were deadbeats at this point.
That's a nice way to put it.
Let me just say this to Carousel. You kids hang in there. You'll get good.
Yeah. keep practicing.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine. How are they going to get better? They're already there. I want that album. That's amazing.
Amazing.
Well, so congratulations to Maya and to Carousel and to Maya's dad, Mark Ronick.
Absolutely. By the way, the song is called People Change, and we've got links in the description at BobSeska.com, also at BobSeskaShow.com, our Patreon page. So make sure to support Carousel and all of our great indie bands here. And if you want to submit, BobSeska.com/music.
And she'll be, and all the other music will be on your monthly countdown, indie countdown show.
That's right, at the end of the month. That's right, Buzz. It certainly will.
But wait, there's more.
All right, I don't know why I went there.
I got some breaking news for you you're going to like.
Oh, yeah, let's have it. I got to hear some breaking news.
It begins with the words Donald Trump Jr., is returning to the Senate Intelligence Committee for a closed-door interview. He had initially balked at testifying for a second time. So it's closed door. Yeah. It's the Republican-controlled Senate. This is progress, I think, in terms of him testifying. And frankly, in my mind, sets a precedent for him for testifying for the other house of Congress.
Yes. I hope, you know what? I hope they grill the hell out of him. I was hoping for public hearings, of course. But, you know, I'll take closed door hearings.
I'll take closed door hearings, public floggings. Well, that's how we'll do it.
That's right. And by the way, I fully recognize the fact that when I've been saying wow lately on the show, I've been sounding like Owen Wilson for some reason. I don't know why, but
Not nasal enough.
But you said the breaking news about Don Jr. and I immediately went,
The incredulity. Yes. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, but it wasn't intentional. I'm not doing that intentionally.
No, just for some reason. Was a genuine response. Yeah.
Wow,
I mean,
that's man.
I think we all felt the same
way. Okay. So what the hell were we going to talk about here? Trump lied or is asking his aides to lie. See, I'm conflating the lie about Mexico, where he lied about the deal with Mexico. Did you see him? He was headed out to Marine One like he always does, stopped by the press gaggle, and they kept asking him, what's in this deal? What are the details of the deal? His secret, And he pulls out a piece of paper. It's all right here on the paper. It's all right here. And they're like, well, what's in it? And they're actually yelling at the president. He goes, not going to tell you. It's all right here on this one piece of paper.
Yeah, it's actually a dry cleaning receipt.
Probably, my God. But, you know, obviously this guy lied about the deal and, you know, set it up to be as if it was something that he had just finalized. And we find out from the New York Times that Mexico agreed to this 2 months earlier. And so Donald Trump was merely doing this for politics and a distraction and all the usual bullshit reasons he does it. And then,
but the fun didn't stop there. You know, he said, when it was pointed out that the emperor had no clothes, that really pissed him off. And so he declared that there had been also a secret deal that hadn't been revealed yet.
That's right. Like
secret deal. And then, of course, Mexico's foreign minister had to say, no, there was no secret deal here.
Yeah. And, you know, he even went farther than that, Buzz. He actually tweeted in all caps the other day, Mexico has agreed to immediately begin buying large quantities of agricultural product from our great patriot farmers. It was in all caps, so that's why I'm yelling.
That requires interpretation. Let me tell you what he actually meant. I do it for Biden. I'll do it for Trump. What he's actually saying is, Mexico, please buy more of our crops.
Yeah.
That's it. Mexico, please buy more food from us. That's basically what he was saying.
Well, what we found out the same damn day that he issued this stupid, stupid all caps tweet is from Bloomberg. So this is not some fake news or anything like that. Three Mexican officials said Saturday they were not aware of any side accord in the works and that agricultural trade hasn't been discussed during 3 days of negotiations in Washington that culminated in a joint communique late on Friday. Uh-huh. So, I always love the Mr. Burns use of the word communique in a news article.
Excellent.
Communique. Oh, look, a communique. All right. Mexico's ambassador to the U.S. predicted on Sunday that trade in agricultural goods could increase dramatically now that tariffs aren't going ahead. And if the USMCA, the Trilateral Trade Pact with the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, designated to replace NAFTA, is ratified, but didn't cite a specific deal with Washington on farm purchases. So when Trump says Mexico has agreed to immediately begin buying large quantities of agricultural product, he's lying, of course, like always, which is not news anymore, I guess.
No.
But I feel like if we don't call it out, then we're just normalizing him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, even the farmers know he's lying, too.
Yeah, meanwhile, the New York Times reported today that Trump's been asking his aides to lie about internal polling. Trump told aides to deny that his internal polling showed him trailing Joe Biden in many of the states he needs to win, even though he is also trailing in public polls from key states like Texas, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And when top line detail, by the way, it's still way too early to be able to take those polls seriously. I know we were talking about that earlier, and I was like, well, it's enticing, and it is enticing, but you know what we see now in polling is going to change drastically a year and a half now when we actually need those polls to turn into votes. So just cautioning you about this. New York Times continues by saying, and when top line details of the polling leaked, including numbers showing the president lagging in a cluster of critical Rust Belt states, Mr. Trump instructed aides to say publicly that other data showed him doing well. In recent overarching state of the race briefings in Florida, Brad Parscale, his campaign manager, Mr. Trump was consistently distracted and wanted to discuss other things, according to people familiar with the meeting. When it came to the campaign, his main focus was on his own approval numbers. Mr. Trump has griped about traveling too much, but then lashed out at aides demanding to know, why am I not doing more rallies? Well, because you just complained about traveling too much. Biff. He insists
he's got
on
two big ones.
Yeah.
He's got two big ones coming up.
Yeah. Is he going? Is there going to be one today? Is that where he's going today?
It's a week from a week from tomorrow. It's next Wednesday in Orlando because Orlando's on the fence about Trump and not in a good way for him. Here it is. Here are the numbers Trump wants to suppress or distract from.
Gotcha.
Disapproval ratings. These are disapproval ratings in the key battleground states. His disapproval ratings are way over 50% in New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Iowa. Listen to that. The battleground states of, and he's like, it's like 58%, 56%. He's way over 50% in New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Iowa. His disapproval is 52% in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
It's 51% in Arizona. Yeah, I know, right?
Wow.
And 50 in Ohio and North Carolina, and it's nearly to 50. It's like 48, 49% in Florida, a disapproval rating. Nearly half the state, almost even half the state of Florida is anti-Trump at this point, disapproves of Trump. Oh. And so he's in serious trouble in the key battleground states. It's no wonder he wants his aides to distract from those numbers and point out other polls.
A little bit of a factoid here buried in this New York Times piece. Apparently, Trump is insisting on having final approval. Talk about a micromanager here. He insists on having final approval over the songs on his campaign playlist, as well as the campaign merchandise. But he has never asked to see a budget for 2019.
No, no, he can't be bothered. Can't be bothered with those details, but music. Nobody knows music better than Donald Trump. That's not the only thing he's micromanaging. The 4th of July celebration, this outrageous thing.
Yeah.
He's micromanaging that. Again, not the cost. Oh, heaven forbid. No, but he's more concerned about the theatrics of what will be after he announces in Orlando next week, and then coming up on July 4th, his next big campaign rally at the West Potomac Park. In Washington, D.C. for the 4th of July, and he's using that for politics for the first time ever.
Well, you know, Rachel played a really interesting bunch of video clips the other day in which she was underscoring the fact that the last time someone tried to co-opt the 4th of July, it didn't turn out very well for, in that case, Nixon.
Well,
where there were mass protests and there were some...
it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
We're going to have protests again. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, again, it's in that particular instance with Richard Nixon... The protests turned ugly. They turned destructive. And if that happens this time around, well, no one wants to see anyone get injured. But
well,
again,
thank goodness no one drinks on the 4th.
Yeah, there's that. So, well, I guess there's no reason to worry. But seriously, I get the feeling that there's the same thing is going to happen this time around, and it's going to be madness.
I'm afraid
so. Yeah, and just you don't do this shit. You don't do this. Please don't.
He's inviting it.
Why are you doing this? Don't do this, as Larry King once said to me. So it makes no sense, but of course he's doing it anyway, and he's going to create all kinds of trouble that we didn't need in the midst of all kinds of other trouble. All right, lots still to get to. Buzz, you're going to be thrilled to hear this news.
What's that?
I got into another fight with Dan Bongino on Twitter over the weekend.
I saw briefly, I looked away.
I will recap some of that on the Postmortem Show coming up here in a second, only because of the immense dumbness that I encountered. So we'll talk about that here in a few minutes on our Patreon page. Meanwhile, we talked about this in the context of Pfizer last week, where Pfizer may have devised a cure for Alzheimer's. Well, there might be another cure, another possible cure for Alzheimer's coming from the University of New Mexico. So we'll have that, too. All coming up on the Postmortem Show on our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. Meanwhile, the best newscast of the week is Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes or follow on BuzzBurbank.com or RealmNetwork.com, also Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. All right, see you on the after or the Postmortem Show, folks. Bye-bye.